on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YoteCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up? How you doing? This is the D-Days edition of YoteCast. Welcome to it. Happy D-Days. Hopefully, you're having a great week, and it all culminates with the football game on Saturday as the Coyotes take on Southern Illinois. So hopefully things go well for the Yotes on Saturday. Get your tickets at goyotes.com. You can call the ticket office at 605-677-5959 as well. So happy D-Days to you. Coming up in the show today, we will preview the Salukis with Mike Reese. He's the radio play-by-play voice of Southern Illinois. And we will also go back in time, our 50 years of Title IX celebration. This week, we chat with Jan Whitman, who was the first ever head volleyball coach at the University of South Dakota. So a great conversation with her about how she became the head coach, how they built a program from scratch. And we talk a little bit about the differences in recruiting back then, where she would write to student-athletes. That doesn't happen much anymore. Of course, you do write to them still, but it's not just to say, hey, you want to come play volleyball here. It's more of good luck and things like that, that coaches continue to write to athletes. But it was very different back then. So we'll talk to Jan Whitman coming up in the show as well. Let's get it started with David Herbster. He's the athletic director at the University of South Dakota. David, the week is finally here. It is D-Days. Happy D-Days to you.
Happy D-Days.
Have you heard that enough this week yet? Or is it it's always out there, isn't it?
It's always out there, but it's really fun. I mean, we were able to really kind of get back into it last year. We went through a couple years where D-Days was just kind of, you know, muted a little bit. So to get back into it, to have that excitement, to have, you know, everybody looking forward to being back on campus, to folks coming, you know, back into Vermilion, homecoming court, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's good to have this week.
You know, I'm excited for just the week, because it hopefully will bring out a big crowd for football on Saturday, and certainly a team that has been kind of, you know, up and down a little bit. Obviously, the record's not where they want it, but a team that certainly needs the support on Saturday, and it could be a really fun atmosphere.
You know, it's one of those where you've got it's a chance for everybody to come back to campus, right? That's what homecoming is. And you'd like to do it here regardless of the record of the team, whether you're 5-1 or 1-5. It's the chance to come back and reconnect, get back to campus, see your classmates, see longtime friends, celebrate, have a good time. And you're right, though, this year it's like, boy, you really hope they come back, because the football team, the record isn't kind of what, you know, we hope or you would expect right now. But that's when we need everybody more than ever. And, you know, really to kind of come back and rally is one of those that I think Kyle fans or whoever it is, it's not just about the game. It's about the entire weekend. It's about friendships and relationships that you really want to come back and celebrate.
No doubt about it. Should be a fun atmosphere this weekend, and we'll see how things go for football. You know, they take on Southern Illinois, and a team that we played in the playoffs last year. It seems like even though they they weren't on our schedule last year until the playoffs, but kind of a little bit of a rivalry built there. We just seem to always end up somehow playing Southern Illinois.
I know, right? And it's I look forward to it. I mean, now granted, you and me don't get to put on helmet and pads and go out there, but this is a team that beat us in the playoffs last year, and it's, you know, I think they're probably coming in here this year a little bit and probably aren't going to treat us with much respect. And I'm like, guys, this is our house. It's time to defend the dome. And it's been so competitive. I mean, we've won on their home field. They've won on ours. We both defended our home turfs. I mean, we smoked them at their field several years ago. So, I mean, it's become one that's been a series, I should say, that's been extremely competitive. And this Saturday is going to be no different.
No doubt. This year, right now, this time period, it's getting into an interesting time period, because there is illness that has been going around. I think people can hear in my voice that I've been hit with something this week, and I know it's going around right now. And I'm curious, from an athletic standpoint, as we start to get into flu season, how is this going to impact, our focus on the flu versus COVID and how we handle some of that? There's still COVID concerns out there. So how are we handling this with student athletes who might come down with some symptoms and proceed, because it's been an interesting last couple of years?
It really has. And this is, well, okay, you're not feeling well. I wasn't able to go to the football game this weekend. I woke up early Friday morning about 1 a.m. With not feeling very good in the stomach, and it basically kept that way through Saturday night. And so I ended up with the flu, no doubt about it. I wouldn't even come close to mistaking that for COVID. And I hadn't had a flu shot yet. And we've already had one flu shot clinic for staff and for students. And we'll have another one at the end of the month. And I was sitting here thinking, well, I'll get the flu shot at the end of the month, because that just means it'll last me that much longer. Well, I guess that didn't happen the way I had anticipated, and I got bit. But what we're doing with our student athletes is really encouraging the flu shot, and how do we distinguish that between COVID? And certainly therein lies a little bit of the challenge, right? Because sometimes the symptoms can be similar. So When our student athletes get the flu, the good thing is we can test for COVID and we can test for the flu. And so really it's about making smart choices and little things, right? These are things that we've either told our kids or our parents told us: get plenty of sleep, drink plenty of water, eat regularly, wash your hands, blow your nose in a handkerchief and not your sleeve, stuff like that. And, we can do some little things to try to keep our athletes safe, but if an athlete right now comes down with the flu, granted, you got to stay home until symptoms subside, and they stay in contact with our trainers, and our trainers coordinate with our doctors. And we're still going to deal with COVID. My middle daughter has COVID right now, of all things. You're like, seriously? So we're still dealing with that. So there's a different protocol for COVID. It's not as strict as it once was, but we hold them out of competition and practice for 5 days. And test again, and then we can bring them back out, but they have to wear a mask for 5 days. And so it's not as, and we don't do nearly as the intense level of contact tracing that we used to. It's now going to be part of how we just naturally and deal with things every year. It'll be no different than how it's going to be kind of how we dealt with the flu. COVID is just going to be right there side by side on how we deal with those things. And so it's always going to be there. I don't think it goes away, but it's going to be more a part of just everyday life, and it's nothing to panic about.
People have still asked, how much are student athletes still being tested for COVID? How is all that being handled now that, it's still a concern, but we're a couple of years removed from the major shutdown that we saw?
Right. And we're only testing our athletes if they become symptomatic. And, there's a list of things that you can kind of go through. Not every athlete who might come up with symptoms gets tested. It depends upon the series of symptoms that they might present. For instance, when I got sick this weekend, I did not present COVID-type symptoms. Mine were absolutely stomach flu-type symptoms. And so athletes, we've gone away from, testing all the athletes 3 times a week or this, that. Do we still encourage athletes to get, vaccinated? At this point, we encourage it, but it's not something either get vaccinated or we put you in a different protocol, or we put you in a different, you're in this pile, so you have to get tested. If you're vaccinated, then you don't have to get tested. We've kind of done away with that part of it. And that's really on the guidance of both our team doctors and our experts at Sanford Health, as well as the NCAA's guidelines.
Yeah, certainly a lot of people always involved in those conversations, and you continue to have those conversations going forward, and as much as it remains necessary. How about looking ahead at some of the, big landscape type of things? One thing we haven't talked about in a while is There's always conference realignment, and lately there have been a few FCS teams. We know over the next couple of years that we'll be moving up into FBS conferences, particularly Conference USA, which lost some members to the Sun Belt, and now they're trying to revive Conference USA a little bit. But with some of these FCS teams continuing to move up to FBS, how do we feel right now about FCS football, about our current conference and the state of where we're at and what may shift here over the next 5 or so years?
Oh, boy, I wish I had a crystal ball, John. You know, yeah, Kennesaw State's move was interesting. I felt like Conference USA is taking just anybody with a pulse to help round out their membership as their other members have left. And so their only recourse is to pull up members. You know, they're trying to get to the magic number of 10 or 12. You know, and anymore, when you look at what Conference USA is going to look like, those schools have nothing in common. I mean, very little in common. That's where they're at. Where are we at right now? And these are conversations that we will continue to have in both the Missouri Valley and the Summit League. Where is FCS football? To me, it's still on incredibly strong footing. Have we lost some members in FCS football? Sure. But there's a bunch of others that are popping up that are really, really good that are starting to come to the surface. So I really think that we have to wait a little bit on what we think it's going to look like long term until the NCAA's, the board of directors and this transformation committee get finalize what it means to be Division I. And, you know, I think the board of directors meets next week. And, you know, if I think about the things that they're really, when they talk about membership expectations on what it means to be Division I, because I think it's very difficult to make a decision on, are you FCS or are you FBS? Are you Group of Five? Are you the Autonomy Five? All these little, you know, acronyms have come out. And really, you know, what it means to be Division I is what they're going to have to define. And so it could be about the student athlete experience and other outcomes. Think about like mental health, physical health, academic support, life skills, post-participation benefits, degree completion, stuff like that, that they're going to have to kind of determine what does that mean, at how do you fulfill those elements at Division I. There could be sports sponsorship minimums, financial aid minimums, additional, you know, minimum scheduling requirements, and that's the, you know, that's recently come up, and it's the first time I've heard about that. There's still so much stuff that goes out there that is still waited to be determined. Now, with that said, if I think about what Kennesaw State is doing to the going into Conference USA anymore, I look at, like, let's say the Missouri Valley Football Conference. There's a conference of schools that look very, very similar. You're probably better off having that whole group go FBS if that's what it means versus any individual parts of us going off and peeling off to travel halfway across the country every single game to go play somebody. But it really is going to come down to what does Division I football look like? And that means FBS football, FCS football, even the FCS football that's the non-scholarship football. How do they fit into this whole mix? Because those non-scholarship football programs at Division I are tied to Division I programs like a Butler, like a Drake, and some others like that. So I wish I had a crystal ball, but I think right now we continue the conversation at the conference level and look at the landscape when it kind of the dust starts to settle and determine not only where should we be, where can we be based on requirements or minimums.
I think the concern for a lot of people is that maybe there are some, you know, conversations going on behind the scenes that maybe people don't know about it. How do you feel personally about the transparency with the members of the Missouri Valley Football Conference and what their interests might be?
Oh, sure. I've heard those rumors before, and frankly, it's a lot of speculation. People just assume that North Dakota State's going to leave or South Dakota State's going to leave or whatever it is. Or, you know, we're going somewhere. It's not something that even if we in having any of those types of conversations, certainly not going to make any of those public. Certainly not going to entertain or even validify people's speculations or rumors that those conversations are even happening. So course, people's fear are is that somebody's going to get left behind. And what I would tell you is that we are probably more alike and more aligned than people think. And so we can, it doesn't do any one of us any good to speculate on that, because it not only hurts our own institution, it hurts your member institutions, it potentially hurt the institution who people think they're going to.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, we'll see if this, have you seen this on Twitter, the Snowbelt Conference that's trying to become a conference?
Oh, which one's that now?
Well, it's called the Snowbelt Conference, and they have a group of teams that they want to create an FBS conference out of the teams out of the Big Sky and the Missouri Valley Football Conference merging together. So that'd be an interesting name for a conference, the Snowbelt.
That's absolutely the worst name ever. How are you going to get any type of recruit to come to a conference that, hey, where do you play? I play in the Snowbelt Conference. I think I'm coming up from Texas to the Snowbelt Conference. I was talking with my dad today, and it was like 40 degrees this morning in Fort Worth, Texas, where he lives. And they're not that far from the Texas State Fair, which is going on. And I'm like, you guys are wearing parkas and boots thinking that the ice age is coming. It was 17 degrees here this morning, and I walked outside. I'm like, well, it's not that bad. So, no, Snowbelt Conference. Hey, if you're going to come up and have a conspiracy theory, at least have a better name. That one's horrible.
No doubt. Hey, let's talk quickly about volleyball and soccer. It's a big week for both of them. Let's start with soccer. It's the final week of the regular season. They're coming off of a huge win Sunday over Oral Roberts, trying to put the finishing touches on their solidifying a top six spot in the Summit League for the tournament, but a big week for them going on the road up north.
Yeah, you know, got North Dakota State Friday and Grand Forks up at University of North Dakota on Sunday. So you could look at this schedule in a lot of different ways, and they would tell you that we could finish anywhere from second place to eighth place. Well, realistically, I don't know if we can finish second place, because a lot of other people would have to lose in that process. But it does tell you a little bit about the parity in the Summit League right now. Yeah, the win on Sunday was huge. I think we let one slip by on Saturday. And on Friday, played really well against Kansas City. And that's what you get with soccer. You can play, you can outplay somebody and still lose 1-0. And that's what happened. So to come back against Oral Roberts and win is huge. We need to get at least one of the last two to feel confident that we're in. We need to get at least a point. So you need to at least get a tie out of one of those to be able to get in. Anyway, I like our chances once we get in. We still had some trouble finding the back of the net, but this team fights really, really hard. So big weekend for them up north. And, it's one of those where it's nice that you really kind of chart your own destiny. But at the same time, Coach Thomas would tell you, I'd rather get into the last two seasons, not having to have a must win to have a chance at the conference tournament. So at any rate, he feels good about both games.
And then volleyball, they go on the road this week. They're turning it over to page two, if you will, round two of the Summit League. And they're on to Denver and Omaha this week. And I know it's a big week for them, just as they try to continue their success right now alone in first place in the Summit League.
And it's right. You go, Denver and Omaha are the first two teams we faced in the conference. We're able to win both of those, but now you have to go on the road and do it. The good thing is we're healthy. We're playing really good volleyball. Had a strong weekend this past weekend in beating both Oral Roberts and Kansas City in three sets. And they're going to have to play as good, if not better, to win on each one of their home courts. So the good thing is, they play. We're at Denver Thursday night, and then Omaha on Saturday. So at least if you look at it from the perspective of you can at least you have to go out and play, and then you can work your way back, and then it's a short trip home on Saturday to come home. But we're gonna have to play really, really well to win both. And at least right now we are second half of the season, and you're starting off with Denver and Omaha, and that will really kind of set the tone for the stretch race. And who gets the number one seed, but the Summit League regular season title.
It'll be a fun weekend. It'll be fun to follow along with volleyball and how they do on Thursday and Saturday. All right, we don't have any Ask the AD questions this week. Hopefully we'll get some more submitted. But
we'll get some more submitted. So let's do Ask the MC or Ask the Host.
Okay, what do you got for me?
I get to actually ask you a host. Okay, I didn't really prepare for this, so I'm just winging it. You have covered a ton of games in your career. Give me the top two or three, if you can't decide, your most memorable moments calling a game.
I'll just do from USD in my time here, and we'll go top three with an honorable mention. How's that sound?
Okay.
Okay, so the honorable mention is women's basketball at Northeastern. You remember that game? It was a noon game
Yes.
in Boston. The team was down 10 with 3 minutes to go. I think it was Kira Duffy hit a three-pointer. Monica Arns got a couple of steals and scored. And the team rallied and came back and won that game. And that started what went on to be one of the great seasons, the greatest season in the history of women's basketball, especially at the Division I level, with just two losses that year. So there's your honorable mention. It was
Right.
a heck of a three. And I'll tell you what, there were a bunch of kids who were in that game. It was a kids' game, so they had a bunch of kids just yelling and screaming. It was a crazy environment and a lot of fun. So that would be my honorable
That's
mention.
okay, good one.
Okay, number three would be Chloe Lamb's overtime three-pointer against Michigan State in the WNIT. Huge moment, final about, I want to say 30 seconds, 25 seconds. Just a huge shot from the left wing for Chloe Lamb. So that's number three.
Like it, like it.
Number two, my first year covering women's basketball, if you'll remember, it was kind of an up-and-down season. We go into the Summit League tournament, and in round number one against Western Illinois, Rachelle Contreras buries a three-pointer to give USD a 96-94 win over Western Illinois. And at the time, we didn't know what that would mean, but it led this program to its first ever NCAA tournament appearance because they went on to beat State in the semifinals and Denver in the championship. So that is number two. That was a big moment. That was a lot of fun. And I
Yeah,
know you
that one.
remember that shot.
I remember because it was called the shot. Now that was long. That was that long ago that was actually in the arena, not the Premier Center.
That's correct. Yeah, it was
Yeah.
2014. It was the 13-14 season. It was 2014. So that was that shot. And then number one has to be the Hail Mary from last year against South Dakota State.
Oh.
You know, it's amazing. You get the football with 1 second left, and then the ball gets thrown up, tipped around, and caught. It goes on to be Sports Illustrated Play of the Year and one of the most talked about plays. And we'll continue to talk about it for a long time. So an incredible moment to certainly be a part of. So there you go. That's my list.
Those are good ones, you know. And even after that, you know, the shot, the Hail Mary, I'm still surprised you have a voice left after that one, listening to you. I did, of course. I'm sitting there on the field watching it, but afterwards, listening to the call, and after the catch was made and the touchdown, I knew the next day your vocal cords were going to be sore. So
It was
I
amazing. You
like all
know,
those.
we all think we can handle those big moments, and then you kind of just react when they happen. And boy, it was a lot of fun. So there you go. There's some big moments. They had some clutch shots, clutch performances, and it's certainly a lot of fun to watch. So hopefully, we got a lot more coming up for these teams.
I like it.
All
I
right,
like it.
there you go. Maybe we'll do the. Maybe we'll flip around the ask the question again sometime.
I like it.
David, have a great weekend. Stay safe. It is D-Day, so keep your head on a swivel, and appreciate your time as always.
Oh, happy D-Days. Appreciate you, man. Let's go get it. Let's go get a W.
He's David Herbster, the athletic director at the University of South Dakota. Always a great conversation with him, and we always appreciate the time that he gives us for Yokecast. We continue our 50 years of celebration of Title IX when Title IX was enacted into law. And our guest this week is Jan Whitman, who was the first ever volleyball coach at the University of South Dakota. When I say those words, Jan, what does that mean to you? You think back to being the first ever coach here.
Oh, I think back to the shock of it all, because Title IX was kind of in the offing and hoping that it was going to come through. So I was called in the office when I got back from going to school at Temple in the summer to become working with handicapped, to go into the office and being told, we're going to have a volleyball team and you're going to be the coach. I said, whoa, just a minute. I don't know anything about coaching. I'm not a coach. I teach dance. And I teach. You're a physical education major, aren't you? Minor? Yes, I am. Well, then you can coach. So that's where women started. A lot of the women's programs had people who had really been involved, but in my case, it wasn't at all. It was a complete shock. I had never been to a Poller volleyball game.
What do you remember about that time before being asked officially to be the coach, but hearing about Title IX and how this could change the landscape of athletics and just the opportunities for women? What do you remember about those conversations?
Okay, I guess maybe I can go all the way back to when I was a student at the university, and what we had at that time was kind of a sorority intramurals.
Sure. You know,
it was a really loose thing, and it was a women's organization that was, see now at my age, thinking of the initials for things. Anyway, it was a women's recreation association. And when I came back to the university, after being gone, I graduated, came back, and I was called in to see if I wanted to teach because they were short on staff. So I started teaching the physical education department. And at that time, teaching physical education, there wasn't physical education in the schools, let alone anything else. And for women, there really wasn't. We played basketball. I'm playing basketball. I always had to be, there were three parts. I had to be the jumping center, and I could never leave the center of the, so I never really liked basketball that much. But it was, and I've gone away, I guess, too far from the question, but getting up more toward the time just before, I guess I wanted it from day one. So it just goes back so far for me to wanting it. But we worked on getting the recreation program going. And there was a WAA at that time, but the university was not involved in it. And the WAA was a Women's Athletic Association. And it was throughout the U.S., and some of the schools in South Dakota were actually involved in it. My really first thing that happened wasn't with volleyball. When I came back here to teach part-time because they needed someone to fill in, the recreation program had really fallen apart. The teacher, the staff were older and just really didn't involve themselves much in stuff like this. So I got the WRA going again. And so through that, I got a message one time that there was going to be a track meet up at South Dakota State. So I said, okay, to a bunch of the majors in this, I said, how about let's go out, work out, see if we can run up to this track meet. Well, we got there, and never mind, I found out that, whoops, it wasn't a recreational. The rest of these people have been involved already in WAA. And so they know what they're doing. We've been trying to work in these things, and I knew nothing about jumping hurdles, but we we tried. And that was probably, I'm guessing, about 69, 70 maybe, and that's when things were starting to happen, and one of those hopeful things for women that came along.
And obviously it's shaped, women's sports and just opportunities for women so much since then. So now fast forward to the time where you're told you're going to be the volleyball coach and you're thinking, now I got to learn how to be a volleyball coach. But more important than that, you had to recruit athletes. You had to get some students to play volleyball for a program that had been non-existent. What was that process like?
Oh, that was really fun. I was hoping there were a bunch of students here that came from Nebraska, because Nebraska was already playing volleyball. South Dakota, not. There was just none in the high schools. So I put an ad in the Volant. This is the first year, 72, when we just kind of played for fun that year, and then 73 we started actually playing competitively with. Because a lot of other schools were in the same boat we were, just kind of getting started. But I put an ad in the Volant looking for volleyball players. Well, I had one. One gal from Nebraska who came, and she's teaching me, as she's teaching the rest of the majors that I conned into coming out for volleyball. And then it kind of went from there. It took South Dakota a long time to get into the sport. so we didn't really have a lot of South Dakota girls. And some recruiting, you know, the University of South Dakota, if I found a volleyball player somewhere, it was great. University of South Dakota had a great name as a school, easy to recruit to the school. And so it was kind of, I would write to all the girls around Iowa, had kind of started then too, in Nebraska, and I'd go to Nebraska and see what I could get there. And eventually we got kids that were. However, I picked up a lot of athletes. You know, they had the athletic ability and made a volleyball player out of a field hockey player. And she was probably the best volleyball player I ever had. She was super, super. But a lot of athletic gals who learned the game. So it was kind of all of them learning at one time. And volleyball was in then. We played, you know, I'd played volleyball, but it was jungle rules. You could hit to yourself, you could slap it, you could do whatever you wanted to do, and that wasn't power volleyball. So that's kind of the first few years.
You know, as you were talking about recruiting, you said you would write some of these gals and try to get them interested. And you look at how recruiting is now. You got coaches flying all over the country to feature volleyball matches. It was a little bit different in your time, wasn't it?
Oh, extremely different. Extremely different. Actually, the major change came when the university went into NC2A. And prior to that, well, I guess we kind of, I don't know, kind of slowly went into NC2A and into the conference, so that we kind of started in the conference and played a little bit, but it became an official conference in, you probably have the date somewhere, I'm guessing it was probably around 78, 79, somewhere in there. And up to that point, we did win. We played within the state, and we won the state consistently. We got to go to regionals, went to regionals. Well, that was an experience for all of us, because we are now there with young women who have been playing volleyball since they were kids, because they came from different states. And as I watched them, I thought, okay, what we have to do is get into some of these other tournaments. We did not win a match while we were there. I mean, it was just like we were so overclassed. So we went to, we started, I think maybe one of the first places we went was Maryville, Missouri, because the Mules had played in that tournament. I'm thinking that was the one they played in. Anyway, met other coaches there from these other teams in the area, so I started trying to get us into tournaments. So we started playing tournaments, and we're on the road a lot playing tournaments. And everything was pretty much on the road then. So we'd book road tournaments on the road on the weekend. And kind of came of age to the point that we became competitive. And then after we went NC2A and we went into the North Central Conference, the money came in for women's sports, and the athletic department decided that we were going to have a Division I women's basketball team. So they got all the scholarships, while all the other schools were spreading the scholarships out. So it became very difficult to, I mean, it was an impossibility to recruit, because there was no money, you know. Come here because we got a great school, worked at one time, but having a great school, once schools started getting scholarships, it became tough.
Well, you talk about, you know, the late 70s, you were having winning teams, you were having winning seasons and success, and then you go to the NCAA, it gets a little bit more difficult. At what point did South Dakota add volleyball? Because I would imagine them not having volleyball, the state high schools, because that would also make it difficult in the early 80s as, you know, they were trying to bring it in as well.
But I'm trying to think when they brought it in. I know that at the university we had an invitational for any, you know, we'd take any number of schools, and there were a few schools that came. There were a few schools that started volleyball. And I know we were in the Dome at that time. We weren't in the Dome when we started, but we were in the Dome at that time. And it was easy then to have stuff, to have volleyball, because it was basketball season. Mm-hmm. But during football season, we had to roll up the turf at the end of the field for our matches.
So it became a challenge, obviously, with no scholarships. They gave them all to basketball. How did you even get athletes to even have enough players to be on a team? I mean, you would have had to have players that really wanted to play volleyball.
Yeah, but as I said before, they were athletes. So a lot of I had a lot of track. A lot of track girls. But track was sort of in the same boat, too. Really, the money went to basketball to begin with. And so all the other sports were kind of the poor sisters. And then when, well, let's jump ahead to when I was done, if we can.
Sure.
Okay. So the thing that happened, we went from being, at one time, it was physical education and athletics being completely separate. And that's when I first came here. Then we went together as being a combination. And then we reached the point where they decided that never the twain shall meet, kind of. That physical education, because the bulk of my salary came from physical education. Okay, I was just kind of a coach, kind of like in a high school, you know, sure. A coach is somebody that they picked up from the faculty. Anyway, at that time they decided that they would not pay the coaches anymore, the women coaches, or the coaches for the women's sports. Anyway, they kind of did away with a whole bunch of things that you've probably gotten from somebody else, because that was the year that we lost the baseball team, and we... with my particular position, it was the sort of thing that I was told there is no longer, this position is no longer available. Complete your doctorate, stay on the faculty, or coach volleyball and softball. Well, now we'll backtrack to something I left out at the very beginning, and that is when I was called into the office and told I was going to have the volleyball team. I said, I'm not a coach. This just isn't, what am I going to do? Well, I went off and took clinics so that I learned what I was doing, but never did I really look at myself as a coach. You know, the whole time, I'd have been happy. Any day they said, Jan Whitman, you're done, we're getting a real coach.
Yeah.
But it kind of stretched out over a long period of time that they didn't. I was called in at one point and said, you know, we promised you that if you did 3 years, but we don't have, so another year. Well, and then it was kind of, well, maybe they could get a GA. Well, I thought they were, at this point, they were better off with me than a GA coming in and coaching, and they get a different coach the next year, sort of thing, or whatever. So my option was, there's no way. These young women deserve coaches, solid coaches who are really good coaches that we really hadn't put a lot of effort into getting here for the women. And it probably took another, I got a couple of really good, couple of really good gals. The year after me, it was a, and then it went to, they had another gal who was good, and then they had a really, really good gal, and I'm sure that somewhere in your interviews, you will come up with what happened when we got into the problem, when the university got into the problems and went through the lawsuits.
Yep.
Okay, I had to testify during that. And it was one of those things where it was, the women really did not have anything until that point. And they had a super, super, super coach at that time that I just loved. And I think she could have brought the program around. But she was fired because they were putting up this fuss about not having lockers. At that point, we were still in, they were still in lockers with physical education. And we had a little shower that was for the coaches. And quite honestly, the university was very slow in bringing on women's sports, and which is why I'm so delighted today, so totally delighted today to come back and see what we have, what the women have, and how great they are. And the coach, I love her. She is so super. I just hope she stays here. I just really hope she stays here.
You look back now and you talk about being delighted at what USD has and offers women's sports and just women's sports in general. You were in the ground floor of volleyball here, and this volleyball program now is fantastic. you are the ground floor of being a part of women's athletes, athletics at the University of South Dakota, and it has come so far, and we still have a long ways to go, but it's come...
There's a long ways to go.
It's come a long ways.
It's come a long way.
What does that mean to you when you think back to being a pioneer, really? And without you, many of these women wouldn't have had opportunities.
I guess you can say what it means. It just means... Oh, I am so happy for the young women right now who have all of these opportunities that I wanted when I was their age. But there absolutely wasn't at that time. Yeah,
it's just so great to see how far it's come. Jan, you're great. And I know that you weren't a coach when you started, but you were, you'll always be the first volleyball coach at USD. You ended up coaching them for, I think it was 12, 13 years, somewhere in that neighborhood. So you ended up there a long time, and we certainly wouldn't be where we are today without you. So thank you so much for what you've done, and thanks for the time. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you for having me.
That's Jan Whitman, the first ever volleyball coach at the University of South Dakota. And I don't know if you can really hear it there, but when I asked her that last question about being a part of something and starting the program and what it means for today's volleyball program and today's student athletes, she got some real tears in the eye. You could tell it means a great deal to Jan Whitman for what she was a part of. She didn't really want to be a part of it. She was told she was going to be a part of it, but she became a part of it and actually led this volleyball program, you know, for a number of years, 12 years, 13 years, that she was the head coach at South Dakota. And she talked about hard times. You know, they had five winning seasons under Jan Whitman. They were all in the 70s. In fact, Jan Whitman led the Coyotes to an 18-13-1 record in 1979. The South Dakota volleyball team did not have a winning record again until 2003 when they went 18-10. They went 8-6 in the North Central Conference and finished in fourth place. Brian Lappa, the head coach, but 18-10. So 1979, the next winning season was 2003 for Coyote volleyball. Pretty amazing when you look at where the program is today and how far they have come, and they put themselves, you know, in a great spot to be a contender each and every year in the Summit League, and they have put themselves in a great spot to continue to put themselves in contention for the NCAA tournament each and every year. My thanks to Jan Whitman for joining the conversation this week as we continue our celebration 50 years of Title IX. South Dakota will play Southern Illinois on Saturday. This week I caught up with Mike Reese. He's the Southern Illinois radio play-by-play voice to talk about what's going on with the Salukis. A slow start for Southern Illinois, but then they got things rolling against the Big Ten's Northwestern, and they haven't lost since game number two of the season. So we caught up this week to talk Saluki football. Mike, as you look at the Salukis and you get set for this trip to South Dakota, Southern Illinois got off to quite an interesting start, giving up a boatload of points in their first game and then a close loss to SEMO, and then they turned the heads the other way with a win at Northwestern, and since then this team's been really rolling, so they finally found something here the last five games.
Yeah, they've been very good, John, the last 5 weeks, and they have to be one of the better teams in the country, and it has come essentially out of nowhere because Southern wasn't surprised to be 1-2 after three games. They just didn't think the win would come against Northwestern. The luster has come off that win as Northwestern season has gone on. However, at the time, that was a big deal for the Salukis, even beyond the Big Ten reputation of Northwestern, because Southern wasn't good the first two games. 64 points against Incarnate Word. Now, I do think Incarnate Word would not surprise me if they won the national championship. Their offense is that good. And then Southeast Missouri, which is about 40 minutes away from Southern, and when Southern loses to Southeast Missouri in football, the Salukis tend to have a bad season, meaning an under 500 season. So there was no reason to think this was coming, but it has come, and Southern is a legit hot club coming into Vermilion on Saturday.
What has been the biggest change out of this group that you've seen that has allowed them to find ways to win games? And really, you look at their schedule, they're scoring a lot of points. They're scoring up around 30 points almost every game.
Well, from a coaching and a schematic aspect, John, the two most evident things that have happened since the first two games are they are playing legitimate defense. That goes without saying after you give up 64 points in the first game. And Southeast was in the 30s, and while they're having a very good year now and are ranked, they weren't then. They weren't supposed to be strong then. But Southern didn't play well defensively in that game either. They shouldn't have allowed Southeast 31 points. So the defense has gotten better, beginning with Northwestern. Southern is very good against the run, is only allowing 81 points per game. Now, their pass defense numbers will suffer all year because of the Incarnate Word game and the 64 points and the six touchdown passes in that game. Southern's pass defense numbers may never recover. And then I think offensively they found the best way to use their talent. They are a different-looking offensive team with the same players. There's more variety than there has been in the last 2 years with Coach Nick Hill's offense. And it seems to work with the talent that they have, you know, beginning with the quarterback, Nick Baker, and continuing through the two Coxes as the wide receivers. Now, the intangibles, I think, are also important, John, and that is number one. I think we, and I would include the players in this too, fans as well, overrated this team at the start of the year, and the players knew it. And the players thought they were better than they really were, and the humility that came from the first two losses was necessary. Second of all, there are enough new players, especially on defense, that they had to play in order to get good. And I think that was something that even including the coaches, perhaps with a little bit too much confidence, thought that they wouldn't have to go through, because Southern's been pretty good the last 3 years. And it was clear that these defensive people had to play in order to improve, especially communication. It was really lacking in the secondary the first 2 weeks, but it's strong now. And so I think those two intangibles are as important as the tangibles are to Southern's five-game winning streak.
Now, certainly there's a solid rushing attack for that group, and while plays are kind of split for this team, it still seems like they really want to get the run game going.
Well, it's important to them, and they have three good runners, two proven with Justin Strong out for at least another week with a broken thumb. Javon Williams and Romare Elliott are both all-conference caliber running backs. Javon ahead of Romare simply because of his reputation, but Romare is the leading rusher for the Salukis coming into this game. So he probably warrants at least honorable mention consideration. Then there's a third guy named Sean Lester, who's a true freshman, and he's just come on the scene and of late, and it looks like he's going to be strong too. They have improved on the offensive line. I think that would be a third key to Southern's resurgence, John. They didn't block worth a hoot the first 2 weeks of the season, but they're blocking well now. They're keeping Baker reasonably upright, but they're very good at run blocking. And when Southern hits quick hitting plays, those are their best opportunities for big plays running, not running east to west. The running backs running north and south, and the offensive line has been able to provide at least enough space for an Elliott who has a burst and for a Williams when he really gets up in there aggressively to make some yards.
You know, people always ask about the transfer portal and how it affects teams, and you look up and down Southern Illinois' roster, they've got a number of transfer players that have come in the last few years, and they come from community colleges all the way up to Power 5 schools. When you look at what Nick Hill is doing at Southern Illinois, how important has that been to him to bring in some of those transfers and try to patchwork some certain areas?
Well, it's a little dramatic to say that it saved his job, John, but it's just a little dramatic because he had to win coming out of the 2019 season. And he's a local hero. He will be in the Hall of Fame at SIU as a player as soon as he's finished as a head coach here, whenever that might come. Southern has a rule you can't be a head coach and be in the Hall of Fame as a player. As revered as he is, you still have to win, and Southern wasn't winning coming up on his fifth year as the head coach. And so The transfer portal was just coming onto the scene, and he hit some home runs there and still is. One-third of the roster's transfer, and most of those are four-year college transfers. So there's no denying, much like Missouri State, much like a lot of other schools, the importance of the transfer portal to Southern success. Southern wasn't having success with a freshman who would eventually develop into an all-conference type player, which is what you better have if you're going to be in the upper half of the league. Now, Javon Williams has, and Nick Baker has, and Avante Cox is a transfer, but if he's been here 3 years. They've done a good job. Now, they haven't taken many sixth-year guys. There are a couple guys on defense, defensive line in particular, that they've shored themselves up with rotation players, like Nick Okeke from Louisville. But most of their transfers have been in the 2 to 3 year eligibility range, and they've parlayed that into success. Some coaches complain about the portal, and with legitimate reason, but the coaches that can work the portal and know how to use it are the ones that are succeeding. And Hill had to find a way to get more talent and better talent in here, and that's one of the important ways in which he's done so.
Mike, you look at the remaining games for Southern. Obviously, you got this game against South Dakota. There's home games against Northern Iowa and North Dakota State, and then at Youngstown, which is a tough place for anyone to go play, it seems like. But three out of the last four are teams who have kind of struggled throughout the course of the season, and then you have North Dakota State. Southern's put themselves in a really good spot. How do they feel right now about where they're at and the goals that they want to reach, and obviously trying to keep grounded a little bit?
Well, I think the goals really haven't changed, and that's one of the areas where Hill has improved as a head coach. He's 37 now, but he was 30 when they got the job, and taking the and being grounded, as you mentioned, and then the much overused taking one game at a time thing, I think was a challenge for him simply because of his inexperience. But he's better at that now. He has older players now. The team is better led internally. And I think the first two games were enough of a shock, and still are, that they still have told themselves that they're playing, that their backs are against the wall. Now, by surviving the early gauntlet of ranked teams plus an FBS the first 6 weeks of the season, before it eased up against Western Illinois, which is the lowest ranked team that Southern has played so far, they have put themselves in excellent position. So they've gone through the quote-unquote gauntlet, and now they have a chance to play for a conference title for the first time since 2009, or at least a piece of it, with SDSU, who they don't play, with that game against NDSU. So it's right there. And but I think Southern's earned that spot. The way Southern was playing at the start, and really against Northwestern. Northwestern was not a picture-perfect performance, but it was a win. It looked like these games would be gauntlets, too, that there wouldn't be anything Southern could count on. But they're in a good spot. Their overall goal has always been championship, not only in the league, but nationally. And but they haven't worn that on their sleeves so that they would always be held accountable for it when they don't get it. But I do think the championship is important, and so now they've put themselves in position. But we'll find out if they, I mean, they're men, not machines. And so I got a little concerned with the way they played in the second half against Western Illinois, but we'll see if any of that continues. I wouldn't expect that from the team because they play a lot of players, and on offense they involve so many different people that the people who are flat or aren't performing don't play. There is somebody as good to take their place, and that will help you in letdown situations.
Well, we'll look forward to the game on Saturday. Mike, great stuff. Thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it, as always.
My pleasure. See you at the game.
He's Mike Reese, the radio play-by-play voice of the Southern Illinois Salukis. Joining us here this week as we preview Southern Illinois, and that's the Coyote opponent on Saturday. 2 o'clock is the kickoff. Inside the Dakota Dome, get your tickets at goyotes.com or call 605-677-5959. All right, before we wrap things up, let's find out what's going on in Coyote Athletics for the week. Coming up on Thursday night, the South Dakota volleyball team is at Denver. That is a 7 o'clock Central Time first serve. The Coyotes trying to remain with just one loss in Summit League play, 18-2 overall on the season. On Friday, swimming and diving will take on Lindenwood and Kansas. That will be in Lawrence, Kansas. That they will swim against them. And women's soccer is at North Dakota State with a 6 o'clock start time on Friday night. The women's soccer team trying to lock in a top six spot in the Summit League for the Summit League tournament. Swimming and diving continues in Lawrence, Kansas on Saturday. Football takes on the Southern Illinois Salukis. 2 o'clock is the kickoff. You can watch it on Midco Sports. You can also listen to it on the Coyote Sports Network and the Varsity Network app. Download it, and you can search for South Dakota. You'll get alerts every time we start a broadcast. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday, volleyball is at Omaha, another big one for the Yotes. As of this recording, Omaha's won 7 consecutive matches, so they are rolling right now. That'll be a big one. Women's soccer wraps up their regular season on Sunday, 1 o'clock in Grand Forks. They'll take on North Dakota, so a big one for them. And then the women's golf team is in action Monday and Tuesday in Spartanburg, South Carolina. It's the Terrier Intercollegiate, so they will compete with 2 rounds on Monday and the 3rd and final round on Tuesday. All right, that's what's going on in Coyote Athletics. Hope you can catch a game, match, or meet very, very soon. And that's going to do it for us this week. I'm John Thayer. Have yourself a great week. Stay safe and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.